And I don't blame anybody for that, because when you go on any commission board or you go into any artistic room, you go into any artistic room or you go anywhere to kind of say, this is what I'm charging for my work. You're doing so based on kind of the underlying market you've been observing over the years of your art practices. And there's nothing wrong with trying to make a little bit of extra money from your practices. But I think for a lot of you in the end, it's hurting you. It's hurting you severely. I think a lot of artists are doing commissions too early and hurting their practices and setting a standard or kind of reinforcing a commission standard that is hurting the entire market as a whole. And you really need to start seeing it like the stock market. Each time you guys put out your work at a commission level and saying, I'm going to draw a full sketch for $25, right? And that sketch takes you 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours to do. You're basically saying that sketches are worth $25. And I understand that you're saying, well, my sketch might not be as good as like professionals and whatnot, but anybody that is near your level and you're doing it for $25, anybody that's near your level is now forced down to $25 if you're competing with them, because you're undercutting that price. It's like a share size in the market. If this were stocks and stocks are being sold at $80 and bought at $80 and you come in and you start buying and selling stocks at $25, it takes that whole stock value and drops it down to $25 and creates a bottom from where it needs to grow again. And from what I'm seeing, a lot of you guys, I've been looking through the commission info share for a while now. I think it's actually been deleted and changed, because I remember there was a lot more commissions on here. But I'm looking through this and I'm seeing what you guys are doing, and you need to ask yourself, how long is it taking you to make these things? What is your time worth when you're making commissions? And if it sounds like I'm being harsh, it's because somebody kind of needs to be, because I'm not really seeing much of anybody cover this sort of subject. And other than maybe Steven Silver, but he covers kind of doing those art contests and whatnot, which is a whole different can of worms, and I'm going to reserve for another conversation. But nobody's really talking about what you should be charging at all. There's really been nobody to kind of say, this is what the baseline is, because art is kind of abstract, right? It's subjective. It's hard to value. But we need a value. We need a baseline to work from. And that baseline needs to be addressed based on an hourly rate. You need to be treating your time like money, because that's what it is. People are taking you away from your practices in art to tell you what to do and giving you money for that. You are literally, like in a weird sort of way, becoming an extension of somebody else's mind. You are just a hand to execute somebody else's vision. You're a tool for somebody else whenever you're doing a commission. You're a straight, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's the freaking business. But that comes with a value. And if you're not valuing yourself correctly, you're not only hurting yourself and your monetary value, because you're setting you're basically telling the world whenever you put up these commission prices that I'm worth this, right? All of you are not worth, at some of these prices, $6 to $5 an hour. You're worth at least minimum wage, I would say. Would you go to McDonald's and accept $3 an hour because you're desperate for money? Hell no. That's your time. That's your fucking time. For something you're passionate about, and I know many of you want to make a career in, that a lot of you have spent years studying to try to master, you're saying I'm willing to take under minimum wage for your time, and also dealing with the headache of of nightmarish clients that are going to force you to go through revision and revision and revision. I mean, really think about it. How for many of you that have not done a ton of commissions, you know, you might not have an idea of how ruthless and annoying clients can be. And how many times you set a deadline for yourself and you say, okay, I know I can get this drawing done in 3 hours. And then you spit it off to a client and they spit it right back and say, oh, no, change it. That's time away from what you want to be doing. I can tell you that most professional artists, even semi-pros or people that are just making money on the side for commissions, have been banging their head against a wall for certain clients that have forced them to revise things. And they're taking an emotional – every time you deal with a client and they're taking you away from things you want to do, you're taking an emotional toll on that every single time. And it can make you hate doing art. It can, I personally, as a professional graphic designer from age 16 to 22, walked away from that profession because not only was I not valuing my time and the and marketing myself at the proper prices to make the emotional toll worth it, but I was not setting the right parameters and lines in the sand for my clients. And it made me hate it. To this day, I cannot do graphic design for somebody because of the years of emotional toll I had taken after I thought I was done with the project and somebody spitting it back to me and actually making it worse and whatnot. And I ended up hating it. And this is kind of why I'm like a little bit angry and whatnot, is because I'm seeing so many of you enter into a freelance field and setting yourself up for so much heartache, and only the iron wills will make it out. The people who are super freaking disciplined and can deal with this sort of social nonsense. But for many people, they will just get freaking annoyed of it. And God forbid they drop art altogether because they're like, I don't even enjoy this field anymore. It's not even worth it for me. I'm not making money. I'm wasting all my time. I'm taking time away from my family, my friends, vacation time, fun time, movie time, time with your significant other to do these people's freaking projects. And you're not getting paid for it even remotely well enough to be able to take time away when you start relying on this money to take time away from doing those things. You're not getting paid enough to take breaks. So you're just like overwhelming yourself. And guess what happens when that happens? You stop practicing. You stop getting better. Is it worth it? When you make a commission sheet, think about what if 10 people come up to you, right? And they say, I want to do this. And you're charging $6 an hour. You know, you're not even charging $6 an hour. Realistically, a lot of you with the amount of revisions and whatnot are charging $2-3 an hour for your sketches. Is that worth it? Really think about it. Really, really think about it. Like what's worth your time? So let's start with a format that you guys probably should be working from. When you're making commission sheets and you're marketing yourself out there, I don't know where this trend came from. I get its logic, but I don't understand why this trend is so prevalent to put your prices on these commission sheets. You might be asking yourself, well, they got to know what they're paying, right? I'm competing. I mean, if I go to Walmart or I go to Publix and I want to buy, you know, some milk, there's a price right there. Well, guess what? That's a tangible product. That's already been done. That product already has a value. It's already, when you go buy something from the store that has a price on it, it already has value. It's already been done. It's already been worked out how long it takes, what the overhead is for it, and how much is needed for a profit, right? And I get that you don't have much of an overhead for making art. For many of you, the overhead was buying the digital tablet and a computer, which you already have. You don't have to invest any money whatsoever to make money. But why are you hurting? You're investing time, and that time is valuable. That's time you could be using for much more fruitful things, like getting better at art. So when you guys make these commission sheets, and I'm looking at a lot of these commission sheets, and I'm seeing these prices on the commission sheet, you know what you're actually doing? You're saying to them, this product is already finished. I know how long it's going to take for me to do, and here's the final price of that product. So $20. You're telling them, no matter how long this takes, how long this one illustration takes, it's worth $20. It could take me 10 years to do this, but it's worth $20. Why? How should you approach your setting up a commissions page or a freelance page? You should approach it like any designer does or any lawyer. You just give a list of services of what you're willing to do. That's all. Just give a service, show some examples, make a mini portfolio, and give a list of services you're willing to do. I'm willing to do sketches. I'm willing to do full color art. And here are examples, and you need to post those examples. Here are some examples of my work. This is what it looks like when I do a full color art. This is what it looks like when I do inking. This is what it looks like when I do a sketch. These are the things, this is what it looks like, and these are the things I'm willing to do. I'm willing to do furry hentai art. I'm willing to do that, right? I'm willing to do this and this and this if I'm a lewd artist. Don't put a price on it. Why are you putting a price on it? Never put a price on it. Just say, this is what I'm willing to do. If people like your art and they want a commission from you, they should be asking first, how much does it cost? Each client. You should never open up that door and say, this is what it costs, because you don't even know what it costs. There should be room for negotiation. You, as you're developing your career as a freelance artist, give me a second. As you're developing your career as a freelance artist and you're brand new and you've never done this before, you have no idea how long these things take you. So don't put a price on it. Have an idea of your hourly price. Do 3 to 4 mock commissions, you know? Maybe for some friends or other artists where you give somebody else gives you a prompt and then okays it and see how long that takes you. The first time you do it is your new baseline. This is actually a technique from woodworkers and whatnot. The first time you do it, that's your baseline. 10 hours to do this commission. That's your baseline. Now, if you're at 10 hours to do a commission, at, let's say, California minimum wage of like $12 or $13 an hour, maybe it's $15 now, that's $120 to $150, right, to do it for 10 hours. If it's taking you 10 hours to do something and it's valued at $120 to $150 and you spitball those prices to people and nobody's coming back to you, what you don't do is start lowering your prices. That's what you don't do. I know that's what you think that's what you're supposed to do, but if it's going below minimum wage, you need to stop. You need to stop, and you need to practice more. You need to practice to a point where your hourly is going to make up for that time. To where, let's say $120 to $150 is too much to charge. Nobody is paying that price for your art, for a multitude of, they just don't feel like the quality is there, right? But they will be paying $60 to $50 for your art. Okay. That's fine. What do we do in that case? We don't lower our prices below minimum wage. What we do is we practice until we can get that hourly turnout to that minimum. And again, we're not posting prices. We're not posting hours. We're working behind the scenes to get the value of our art into a digestible value for the public, right? Once we kind of have like a pipeline that we can work from and we start getting commissions and you're getting better at that, then maybe like as you start getting more and more commissions, you start raising your price. Or here's the even better news. Industry, yeah, but for many of you, I'm talking specifically to and Tavish made a comment in there. I'm talking specifically to beginners right now. For many of you, just a base minimum wage is enough. And again, if it takes you 10 hours to get through a full illustration and nobody's willing to pay that price, you need to be getting it down to only 6 hours or 5 hours to get that full illustration out. And then that is your base. It takes you 6 hours. You're like, people are willing to buy at 6 hours. Very cool. Very, very cool. They're willing to buy it at 6 hours, right? At minimum wage. You know what you can do from that point? You can get faster. You don't change your price. You still say it takes 6 hours to do. But you're going to reward yourself for getting faster with more monetary value. And you're actually going to be, without changing the price for the public, right, at the 6 hour rate, what you're capable of doing is getting faster through those commissions. You're actually giving yourself a raise by getting faster. And you're giving yourself more breathing room. Now, the next thing, the next evolution from that would be, okay, people are buying your art all the time, all the time. They're buying it. They're consuming it. They want more of it. You're getting commission offers left and right. Now you can start being picky about who you want to do commissions for. Or even better, now you can start raising your prices and weeding out some of the more annoying people. I would say as you start to grow and you start to get more and more commissions, well, next time somebody approaches you, when you do your mental calculation, my baseline for a full illustration is 6 hours. If I was charging $15 an hour, that would be $95 at 6 hours. But I have like six or seven people that I got to deal with. I don't want to deal with that. By raising your price to $20, $25 an hour, right? And only doing commissions for three of those people that are willing to pay, you're spending less time for more money. And again, have I said at any point that you're posting prices? I got to stop paying attention to chat. It's distracting me. Did I say at any point post your rates? No. That's all done in your negotiation period. One other caveat is that if you know for real it's going to take you 6 hours to get through an illustration and you're going to spitball them a price, you need to set a line in the sand for revisions. A lot of you haven't even considered your fucking revision stuff. You need to understand or give it. If you're not comfortable negotiating revisions with people, then you need to be adding at least 1/4 additional time to 1/3 additional time in your final estimated quote for your clients, saying, okay, it's going to be about this amount of money. You don't even have to tell them the hourly. You know what I'm saying? You can say it's going to be a flat rate if you want to give them a flat rate. Flat rates do entice people more. Because a lot of people will turn away when they see it's an hourly. But again, that's things you need to know for yourself. Your clients don't need to know that. They don't need to know how long it takes you to get through an illustration. They don't need to know how you're pricing these things. All they need to know is how much money they're going to be paying for their commission. That's the only thing they need to know. You, as a person who is running a business, needs to understand what your value, what your time is worth. And you need to be creating and setting the boundaries for your clients. Otherwise, they're going to abuse it. I promise you they're going to abuse it. I have not met anybody in the industry today that has done commissions that has not had at least 30% of their fucking clients to 50% of their clients not abusing their time when they just say, this is how much it's going to cost. That everybody gets fucking abused. Everybody. Because the client assumes what they're going to assume. Oh, I'm paying for this service and I'm going to get what I want out of this service. That's what they assume. Until you put lines in the sand for your clients, they won't know where they can and can't go. And a lot of this is actually emotional management for you more than the money. you need to sit down and say, okay, it takes 6 hours for me to get through this illustration. I'm going to add 2 hours on top of that for my own internal quote and estimate that I'm going to put out for that client. Then I'm going to give them an 8-hour rate, and that's the number I'm going to give them. And I'm going to tell them they can revise it at the sketch stage 3 times for free. I would really actually hesitate putting the amount of the number of times, but if you're having a hard time with revisions and your client base is constantly and you're like, let's say you have a consistent client, right, that pays well, but they're really hands-on, micromanaging about your stuff, but they love your work. Then you can say, well, you know what? I'm going to give you like 3 revisions for free at this stage in the drawing. But if we get to the end stage and you make a major edit, now that's going to cost you a new estimated time, because you need to be editing my stuff earlier. And that's actually something that many of you may not have practiced, is proofing stages, right? So there's always a proofing stage. So a lot of you will get a commission. It's a full color commission. You'll get all the way through the commission without maybe just contacting the client and saying, oh, here's, you know, I'm going to have it for you in a couple of days. They don't see anything. Then they get the final version and they hate it. Whose fault is that? It's yours. It's not theirs. It's your fault. Because when they ask for a revision on that, and you say, oh, no, you need to pay me more for fucking revisions, you never gave them an opportunity throughout that entire thing to make changes without affecting your hourly. You basically took something that is their vision and threw it right at them and said, pay me more. You need to be proofing that. You need to know what stages you're proofing at and adjust your prices accordingly. You can say, listen, you get infinite revisions at the sketch stage, because maybe the sketch stage only takes you 15, 20 minutes to do, right? And you're totally comfortable with resketching out concepts. Understand where you can make changes without affecting your time the most. But after the sketch stage, if you're making revisions on my piece, you have to, it's going to be an additional $20 per or $15 per revision at those stages, so that not only you're saving the client a little bit of money, but you're also saving yourself some time, and you have a line in the sand. If you tell clients they have a certain amount of revisions, in general for the piece without sending proofs out first, and a proof is a proof of concept. So sending a sketch out to them to say, this is, hey, do you like where this sketch is going? A lot of them may say to you, oh, you know what? There's not enough information there. You know, I can't see where you're going on that. And you go, okay. And maybe you can negotiate like, all right, I'll finish it up a little bit more for you so you get a better idea of that before I finish the product completely. Would you like to make any changes to it? And then if it gets too deep into it and you give them the opportunity 2, 3, 4 times to make some like major changes on like a pose or perspective or camera angle, by the time like you get all the way down the line and you've given them all these opportunities, then it's on them, because they didn't stop you. If they're like, no, I want to see the full color and everything, and I want to see all that before I make any changes, then you say, well, that's going to cost you a little bit more, because that's more time I'm investing into it. So if I make a change, I literally have to restart the piece from scratch. That's a negotiating. Like, you should be negotiating with your clients, but you're going to get a feel out for them when you're sending those proofs. Let me light this cigarette. It went out. So you always want to be leaving room for negotiation. And again, this is not something I can directly tell you how to do, but it's an underlying mentality I want you to have. I can't tell you what your art is valued at. The market will tell you that. And you need to be doing the work on putting your stuff out there and saying, like, is anybody willing to buy it at when they contact you? Is your market willing to buy it at this price? If everything you're doing is still a no, we still don't lower the fucking prices. Because when you lower those fucking prices, the prices in the commission room is what happens. People start saying, I'll do a head for like $5. Okay. So everybody who wants a head design, like, is going to get it at $5. That's going to lower what everybody else can negotiate, because when a client approaches you and says, I actually like your work, and you go, yeah. And they go, how much is it? And you go, well, it's like $60, $70 to get this head done and whatnot. They go, oh, well, I saw five other artists that were charging $5. Why aren't you charging $5? It's like, that's the conversation a lot of you are going to need to have. And unfortunately, that's not going to change. But if your work quality is there, and you're managing your time, and you're managing your hourly wage, those cheap people, you don't want them to begin with anyway. You don't want them, like, at all. Like, this has the general market of what the commission prices are going to affect your prices negatively, which is why I'm saying, like, we need to kind of change this. But at the same time, good big business practice and good time management and money management skills for approaching these things are something you need to be doing regardless of what the market price is. And if more people are doing that and respecting their own time, their own dedication to the craft, we're going to have a lot more artists making a lot more money doing this. It baffles me beyond belief why people will spend 4 years, 5 years, a decade getting good at art, and they're charging prices less than a plumber. Plumbers are important. No disrespect for plumbers, but you're mastering one of the most difficult crafts out there. With a knowledge base that literally covers, like, you look at art as a whole, everything in reality and everything that's possibly imagined, and that needs to be mastered. And you guys are going to value it less than what a plumber does or a burger flipper? Go get a minimum wage job. It's a lot less stressful. So where do we go from there? How do you adjust where should you value these things? And again, minimum wage, right? Minimum wage. Another problem that I'm seeing is that this is a service industry, right? This is a service industry where you're providing art for other people. You're providing sometimes art for commercial use. Do you have any contracts? Do you have any negotiations for royalties? Like, are you even considering any of that? Do you know how many fucking people have been screwed over out of millions of dollars? Millions. Because they didn't have a royalty agreement or a licensing agreement? You need to be creating contracts. And they're difficult. And this is actually kind of tough. And this is a little bit later down in your career for when you're doing freelance. But anytime a business approaches you, or a commercial, somebody in a commercial field approaches you, you need to have a contract. 100%. You have to have a contract. If you do not have a contract for licensing fees, what happened to the lead graphic designer of Hello Kitty will happen to you. If you take a flat rate on a design or logo for a commercial company, and that commercial company gets big off of your art. That Hello Kitty icon was designed by a designer, right? They're not even in-house. That was out of the business designer. Somebody hired, like, equivalent to a person on Fiverr. That person made a genius logo. That company marketed that genius logo because people fucking loved that logo. And even though that company is responsible for its own success, the iconography of that company was created and developed by a designer. And that designer sees no fucking royalties. None. You don't get crazy with it. Obviously, don't be asking for like 10% of everything. 1-2%, because you're not putting the money into it. You're not marketing the product itself. That company's success is based solely on themselves and whatnot. But if you're giving out dope concepts for video games and whatnot, and you have no concept of negotiating a royalty fee, then you are leaving hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars, hundreds of tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, or millions of dollars on the table. And you're saying, no, I'm cool. Just give me $500. Okay. Why? You negotiate like a 1-2% on a royalty? Okay. Now you're making real fucking money with your art. Real money. And guess what? That's a royalty. That's a one-time job. And you get all that extra money. That's a little bit further down the line for you. But again, you need to be thinking about that. How do you approach it? Well, if you're at the level where you're making your living off of your art and you're filing your taxes based on your art and income, you need to have at least like a write-up lawyer to go to set up a contract for you, pay the money for them to set up a professional royalty contract and licensing contract for you, even if it's $1,000, you know, make that investment, approach a lawyer, have them make you that write-up contract, and every time before you take a commercial commission, they have to sign the contract. And you know what? Those people who are going to take that commercial commission are going to respect you more. And here's another thing about commercial, those who hire from commercial. A lot of companies in the graphic design world, right, won't even talk to you if your starting price isn't $15,000 per logo. It's really kind of funny. And here's the weird thing too. And this is a little bit marketing psychology. When you go to the store like Best Buy, and you say and you're looking for a new home theater system, right? And you know nothing about home theater systems. By the way, most people don't know anything about art. And you go to a Best Buy and you're looking at home theater systems. You don't know like what's a good home theater system. Most of you aren't going to ask the freaking salesman because he's just going to fucking spit lies up your ass anyways. Never trust salesmen. And you look at the prices and you look, okay, this first theater system is $50. The second home theater system, $250. And this third home theater system is $1,000. What do you instinctively think is the best home theater system? The one that's $1,000. Why? Because it's $1,000. Do you have any evidence to justify the fact that it's $1,000 and it's not just $1,000 for a brand name? Nope. You just assume that that's worth more. Why not apply that same psychology to your art? When you're doing a commission and whatnot, they don't know the value of it. They have no idea what the value of it is. Why not charge more? See if it works. If it doesn't work and you're relying on this for an income, if it doesn't work, okay, adjust down. You can get a gauge of what people are willing to pay. But all of you are starting so freaking low with your prices and whatnot, and you're literally putting that out there for people. You've immediately said, I'm the $50 radio system. You might be the $200 home theater system. You might be the $1,000 home theater system. You have no idea. You have no idea what people perceive of your art. People generally perceive you, the general audience will perceive you as much better than you think you are, especially you semi-pros and you like high-tier amateurs and you semi-pros and you low-tier professionals and whatnot. The general public is going to value you really high, really, really high. And that value is going to be completely determined by what you put out there. Go to any art gallery. The fine artists are masters at this. They're absolute masters. Those art dealers are masters because they know, marketing principle wise, that that's just a painting on a canvas, and those idiots that walk in the door, those art buff idiots that walk in the door with hundreds of thousands of dollars have no idea what this piece is worth. But if they tell them this piece is worth $15,000, guess what? Those art buffs are going to buy it. Why? Because the art dealer is a quote-unquote authority on the subject, and the art dealer just slapped a price on it. And that price is huge. So all these people are going to buy that $15,000 print that could have been done by a six-year-old, you know? They're going to buy it because it was valued at $15,000. And guess what? Most rich people. There was an app on the Apple Store back like 10 years ago that was called, that was a like a rich man app. It was literally an app that said, I am rich. It was a $1,000 app. Did nothing. It was a $1,000 app. It was I am rich. It was bought 3 times by rich people just so that they can go, I'm rich. I have the app. You can't afford that. But where was the value in it? It was, there was no value in it. It was assigned value, and then people became the authority on it, or people validated the value just by buying in on it. That's all they did. So what are you going to do with your art? You going to value it low? Are you going to undercut yourself? Well, maybe you have to value it a little bit, like at minimum wage and whatnot. Maybe you're not ready. Maybe nobody's willing to buy it because they don't like it and whatnot. That's fine. That's fine. Put it at minimum wage, but go no lower. And again, if it takes you 6 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours to do and nobody's buying it at that price, wait until you can pump it out faster. And then it's down to a price that you're willing to do. So what are our rules? One, we don't put prices on our commission sheets. We don't do that. Number two is that we adjust accordingly. We don't undervalue our work. If anything, we get better at valuing our work, or we get better at doing our work at a specific value. Three, we always leave room for freaking negotiation, always. And four, if we have to deal with commercial clients, we have to have commercial contracts. Now, there's one other thing I really want to talk about. None of you are taking deposits. Why? Do you want somebody to just turn away or not pay you? Do you know that the likelihood of somebody going through a commission is much, much lower if they never put a deposit down? Why? Because they don't lose anything by walking away. You do. Absolutely. That's what a deposit is for, is to protect you and your time. Here's the cool thing. If you take a deposit on your work and this client says, oh, I don't want to do this anymore, I hate it, and they walk away from you, you made money. And you might have made even more money hourly-wise than what you would have gotten if you finished it. Because they put down a deposit. What should your deposit be? 20 to 30%, not 50. 50 is too much. But 20 to 30% is just enough to keep them committed, but not enough to scare them away from putting down a deposit or feeling like they're going to lose out if they walk away from it. It's free money. Well, it's never free money. You're always doing some work, but you got to do that. And the thing you need to understand is that if you are taking a deposit, you cannot touch that deposit until you've given them a proof. The second you send them a proof, they don't get their deposit back anymore. I would suggest that if you are taking deposits, that you have a basic contract that you can just download online that has a clause that says that a 20% deposit, non-refundable. And you need to be sending invoices out to these people. Because the second you say, I have some of your money, you can run into trouble. Nobody's going to sue you over 20% of a $200 commission or a $100 commission. Nobody's going to sue you over that. But you just don't want to, the second you put it down on paper, it's way less of a headache to deal with them. Because you just go, that's what you signed. I sent you the proof. You rejected it. You walked away. I did work for you. We're cutting it short, but I did send you a concept. And I need to be paid on that because you did work. And you need contracts to definitely, like, now you start, like, let's say your value does go up and you've been taking commissions for a little while and you're at a $200, $300, $400, $500 per piece type of contract, you know? I mean, a per piece type of commission that people are willing to pay. And they turn around and say, I want my $500 back. That's not what I wanted. And I don't want to deal with you anymore. I don't like you and whatnot. You need to protect yourself at that point. Because that might be enough for like a small claims court. It's super freaking rare, but still you need some level of protection. And for those of you, real quick, that are international, we had one guy, he's feeding his family, I forgot his name, Lordo? Really cool dude. Fantastic dude. When we were talking about commissions though, he's charging so low for commissions because his cost of living is so much lower. And he's like, well, I can get more commissions because I don't need that much to live. If you're in that position, why are you not charging the American standard prices or the European standard prices? Why? I get you're getting more out of it, but you're hurting yourself in the long run. Why are you adopting a mentality of quantity over quality? And again, you're just going to stress yourself out like the beginning of this conversation. You're just going to stress yourself out more and more as the commissions start coming in and you may be falling back on other deadlines. You're going to be compromising your time and you're doing so for less than all your peers that are doing the exact same thing. And you're not even being compensated in the same level that the rest of your peers are being compensated in. If you are an artist in a economically unstable country where your cost of living is very low and whatnot, why are you not taking advantage of the fact that your art and your market is international and you could be getting paid like 200, 300 times the minimum wage of your country? Everything should be based for all of you. And I hate to say this, but because the USD is the backing currency of the world, you should all be basing your minimum wage prices on the California standard. I don't live in California, but you should be basing it on the California standard because that's the primary source of the industry. All of you should be looking at the hourly wage in California for your industry standard rates because it's low enough that it's a decent wage everywhere else, but it's low enough that nobody should be batting an eye at it if you are good at what you do. Nobody. There is one exception to this rule about your commissions and prices. There's absolutely one exception to this rule. Only one exception to this rule. If you are in full creative control of what you're selling, you can price it at whatever you want. The reason why I say that is if you're in full creative control and nobody's dictating what you draw and you're able to sell it, you're selling your practice. That's free money. At that point, you can price it at a dollar. Doesn't fucking matter. You're getting free money. You're drawing what you want to draw and somebody's willing to pay you for it. Awesome. The second they have any say on what you do, that price goes up to minimum wage, unless it's a material. And this is directed towards those that are maybe drawing on shirts or shoes or whatever, and somebody says, I just want you to do your own art on the shoes. You can, as long as they're not telling you what to do, price it at whatever you want. If somebody comes up to you and says, hey, can you just draw something for me? I would just love to have one of your original drawings. And they're not telling you what to do, price it at whatever you want. The second they become your boss, and that's the way you need to see it, they're your boss, then you get paid as if you're employed. If it's a hobby, if you're going on Etsy, And you just want to throw it out there for whatever price, that's fine. I don't think that's affecting the market whatsoever. I think you're just putting yourself out there. Of course, there's always an argument to be made, and I would always recommend, why are you valuing it so low? If people are willing to pay more, test it. You know, you should always be testing your market. You need to treat it like a giant test of what people are willing to pay. If you are in a position where you're making your living off of your money in art and you adopt my mentality and you're losing a ton of commissions and whatnot, I would strongly suggest you reevaluate what you've been like, reevaluate your pricing scales and reevaluate your what you've been doing. Because many of you that have been doing commissions, and this is really kind of a, like, the madness needs to stop, like, come to Jesus moment, because a lot of you that have consistent clientele that you've set a baseline price for are going to have a really hard time renegotiating those prices. And this is kind of why I'm like, I need to hop on this conversation as fast as possible. So for you, for those of you that are taking a ton of commissions well underneath your value and you've set a specific price, I would strongly suggest that you start saving your money and then before taking action on a new pricing scale, save your money so that you have at least like a couple months of your rent and whatnot saved up and then transition into a new pricing. Like you need, and this is a suggestion, not advice. This is a big suggestion because you need to sit down with yourself and figure out if you're willing to take that leap. But this is the sort of business practices we need to be seeing across the board from artists so that they're not literally the bottom of the barrel in terms of commission. Dancers get paid more than you guys. Like performance artists get paid more than you guys. Musicians get paid more than you guys. Copywriters, like the bare minimum of writers, get paid more than you guys. This is one of the most difficult fields to get into and to master. And yet all of you are getting paid well under the entry rate for any other creative field out there, except for maybe musicians. Musicians generally get paid on gig, but guess what? They're playing their own music. Nobody's telling them what music to play unless like they're wedding singers and whatnot. And if they are wedding singers, they're getting paid pretty good. You know what I'm saying? I think that covers the majority of what I wanted to talk about. Ricardo, do you have anything you would like to add?
Well, let's see if they have questions. I think you touched on pretty much everything. Yeah. I can give more practical suggestions maybe if anyone wants to ask.
I would say give some suggestions right now and then we'll open up the FAQ.
Well, it'll be easier if I have something to work on to go on.
Okay. There is 99 people in this room.
Can I get a question then?
Sure.
When it comes to having this conversation with the client, the first time building the relationship, all the information about lines, the contracts and stuff should be laid on, actually, would be better laid on a web page, or going through this initial conversation with them would be better, go back and forth of emails or DM, whatever.
I didn't understand the first part. What things do you want to
discuss? It would be if there are these type of changes, like at the stage of concept, the stage of colors, the stage of rendering, or that is as well, this type of things that I do, and if it's going to be more complex, any other characters or many other points, all this would be like lay down a form so people to feel, or just as a web page information about it, and then if people feel, then you started having this conversation as the first relationship.
Hold on. Somebody just put down notes. Hold on. There's something I'm seeing here. If revised at late stage will cost him infinite changes, that's sketching change and after changes of $20. No, don't put a price. Don't put a price on your changes. It should be your hourly rate.
Yes.
So it's not $20. It's what it is per hour. So if you're charging $15 per hour and you're making changes and it's going to take you 2 hours to do those changes, it would be $15 times two. It would be your hourly rate times the amount of time estimated to make those late stage changes, not just $20. That's very important. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, Micro.
Continue. Did it leave?
Micro?
Hello?
Micro, you're muted.
Yeah, I basically made my question. I was just, I think Waveloop was about to...
No, but what was your question again? Because
Costa didn't hear it. Costa didn't hear it.
It is, when it comes to the first relationship that you're building with the client, there are some artists that go like full conversational, like they start trading DMs. They usually go for like a redirect for a web page with a form them to fill about like what type of commission they want, about the details that would influence about the price in the end. So then they think about it, they calculate the cost and then give them back about how it's going to cost. Or they're just like trade information about DMs, like building this first relationship. Because when it comes to the first thing, I think I have the really most struggle. Like all the other parts besides the legal one, I'm okay when it comes to pricing. But it's like building the first relationship, basically.
Yeah, what I do is I try to squeeze as much information as I can from the get-go, as much as you can. You have to realize most clients will not know what they want, technically. So you have to search in what they're saying, exactly what, and you have to almost be a pain. You have to be, it's hard not to be annoying sometimes. Because you know, I know for experience that in the long run, that's going to affect I'm going to spend more time than I'm planning on it. You have to start from the point that this person doesn't know anything about what I do. And right from the start, I try to get as much as I can. What it's going to be used for, how much work is supposed to be done. I lay down all of my process, what they're going to get out of it. I usually set my prices where I include revisions right from the start too, at least 3 of them. And I let them know right from the first connection, wherever the process will lead.
To answer the other portion of your question, which is like, should I send like how to approach that conversation? Should I send them to a forum or should I, you know, hash it out with them? It basically boils down to what style you're willing to adopt. I mean, think of it as a negotiation style. Would it be more convenient for you if they filled out a form? Do you think it would be that simple? I personally don't think that you're going to get nearly enough information without a conversation. As Waveloop does. I think sitting down with them, be professional and say, hey, what are you looking for? Allow them to speak a lot in the beginning, allow them, and then ask directed questions based on what you know about your process. Give them a general outline of what your process is so they have some of an understanding of how you do what you're doing, just like what Waveloop said. And then approach the negotiations from understanding them and them understanding you. If either one of you don't understand each other, there is no negotiation that can ever happen. You need to be talking to them. You need to be practicing this. And do it. You can do it on the phone. Like, you can do it purely over text, and then over time you can do it in person. But you need to treat it with the utmost level of investigation that you possibly can, just like Waveloop said. You need to be investigating your client. Some people will, enough for them is just getting a prompt in a form. I think that's additional time, but it might also be advantageous to make a client fill out a form and whatnot to kind of get a general, to consolidate their own ideas first before even approaching you. Because a lot of them, like Waveloop said, don't even know what they want. So they'll be like, I want a commission and I want this. You know, it's like, okay, cool. Well, how do you want to approach it? And yes, Petra's How to Win Friends and Influence People, that is a very good book on negotiation. You can also look up Tim Ferriss and some of the podcasts specifically on business negotiation. And also The 4-Hour Work Week is a very good resource and book to look into. Anybody else?
Yeah, me.
You cut out. You went robot.
Yeah, I didn't catch that. Hello?
If you can still hear us, say that was me and type it in the chat. We'll take one more, somebody else for now.
Yeah, I got a question.
Okay.
All right. So let's say you complete a piece for your client and they agree to pay you, but it's been a couple weeks, a month, and you still see no money. How do you go about getting your money?
Or even if the client does pay you, but then they renege on it after they get the piece. I'd like to know that too.
Well, this is it. This is why
you don't give the piece before you get the money.
But even still, this is the importance of contracts, especially for commercial, and the importance of taking deposits. Unfortunately, you guys will still run into clients. You still need to be taking 20 to 30% deposits. If you are running into it, if you are in a particular field and you are noticing that you are getting a lot of commissions, but not a lot of payments, and this general audience is actually taking like is cheap and not paying the remainder of your deposits, then increase your deposit to 40 to 50%.
I got so burned in this that I, unlike Costa said in this presentation, I always do 50%. Always. 50% up front. That's the first thing I say. There's no negotiation for me there. I get burned so many times there. That's the only way for me.
I will make one small note on Waveloop, though. You guys do need to realize Waveloop has over six figures of followers on Instagram and is hit up constantly for commissions. He is a professional. Asking for 50% as a professional is very common because the amount of people he can turn down and still have people coming in. This 20 to 30% rule for you is if you don't have a base yet and you don't have the amount of clients coming in to not scare away your new clientele and establish a relationship with a new audience, you should be a little bit lower on your deposits. But again, if you're getting burned too often and you are getting enough clients, taking that deposit. The only thing you guys can do in that scenario is take that deposit.
The girl who got cut off earlier put a message in the chat just now.
Where I don't, the chat.
Meetrusin said, what about some apps like Upwork that they leave you the price and they pay for each work? How you negotiate with them? I mean, how you stay with them. I'm sorry. I just work 12 hour dollars per hour.
What about some apps like Upwork that they leave you the price that they pay for each work? Oh, so that's like Freelancer where you guys are bid. They bid. At that point, you're not negotiating the price. You're taking bids on what you're willing to pay. I mean, willing to be paid. And again, I would not take a bid on a price that if people are bidding for you on Freelancer or any other website where you're posting yourself up and saying, I'm willing to do these services and people are bidding on those services, then I wouldn't even pay attention to any client that isn't even remotely close to what you deem was your average hourly price. For instance, like if you're at $15 an hour and you know that you can get, just like the beginning of the conversation, you can get a piece out at 6 hours and you're at $15 an hour, that would be $75. So if people are bidding for you at like $50, $45 for that commission, and you know it's going to take you 6 hours, I mean, I would strongly suggest you don't take any of those at all. You wait until you can get your that turnaround time around the price that they're bidding.
Little Evan Tyra said, can you sue them or take measures against them if they trace your art after they buy it?
Yes, you can. You can do a civil.
You can lawsuit. You can do a small claims court or civil lawsuit. However, I would say that is, and this is the unfortunate truth, is the court fees going to be worth the collection on that? So, general copyright law and whatnot. If they're commercial, and they're tracing or using your artwork as a trademark, or like they're trademarked and they're using your artwork without your permission, you can, you need to see a lawyer, but I believe you can take all the profits from illegally using the copyright for damages. So if they're a commercial company, you sue them, and you win that case, you can set your settlement towards, while you're in, I forgot the name. It's basically where you're gathering information in the, before you go to court. You can request from their lawyers discovery. While you're in discovery, it was on the tip of my tongue. While you're in discovery, you can request from their lawyers, your lawyer will have to request from their lawyers a full accounting statement on the piece that has been used for market, and then you can sue them for the lost, for the money lost and damages incurred by their profit margin at that point. But again, talk to a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer. So, but yes, you can absolutely take legal action on any of that. And if any of you are planning on opening up a clothing line and you're making products for your clothing line, the clothing line itself should be trademarked. Not only your name for your clothing line, but you should be trademarking yourself and opening up an LLC. And going through a general business practice, going online on Teespring and posting your art there is a very bad idea. Number one, because Teespring owns the rights for distribution on that. And you might be able to have Teespring like negotiate on your behalf. I'm not sure how that would work. If somebody stole the art from Teespring, you could bring it, like, let's say you put an illustration up on Teespring and some idiot steals it and puts it on their own stuff, then you could probably contact Teespring and they may be able to take legal action because they have the licensing right of your art just to punish somebody else, but you probably wouldn't see any monetary gain from that. Teespring would be in the position to gain from that, which again is anytime you use Society6, Teespring, and these distributors for your art, it's not a bad idea, again, if you're doing your own designs and whatnot, and this goes back to the, if you're in control of that creative, of the entire creative process, you can charge whatever you want. It goes back to that. If people are willing to buy it and you have a platform to sell it and it be advertised on, definitely take the money. Why not? You know? But understand that that's not something that should be a main source of a business. It should, if it's performing really well and you're developing the name, as you always should be, and marketing yourself, you should always be transitioning and looking for your own suppliers and distributors for your own clothes. And when you're ready to do that, you do need to register your fictitious name and get a trademark so that everything that you put under that trademark is protected by the trade law. And that might go international as well.
Mike has a question. How do you tell returning clients your prices have changed without scaring them off if your prices have risen?
Again, that was it was kind of what I told you before. You need to change the practice overall. If you really like the client, you can graduate prices. And it's very simple. I mean, you can bend the truth a little bit if you need to. Hey, so-and-so, unfortunately, I have been getting – my time is incredibly limited right now. I've been getting more commissions, or I have been doing that. I've had a slight change in prices and what I'm willing to offer. We can renegotiate what the prices are, but for right now, these are the new prices. Again, that's why I was saying those who are making a living off of this, you need to, before you change your prices, have some money management skills and create a buffer room, because you will lose clients. That's just the way it is. All of you are too cheap, way too cheap with your prices. So your clients are cheap. You know what I'm saying? If they really enjoy your work, they'll understand. But a lot of them are cheap asshole bastards who don't give a shit, and they just want the cheapest thing as fast as possible. And you know what? Screw them. You don't need them.
Yes, it's hard.
If your client isn't okay with your prices, then they're not your client anymore, and you might want to move on, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Ricardo, what were you gonna say?
I was gonna say that it might scare you. It might be hard, but yeah, just honesty and being firm with your what you have to do for yourself. It's a lesson that I learned the hard way. I had to get to that conclusion. That you really need to be firm at some point, or just people just walk all over you.
Singer person has, at any point in talking to a client, do you tell them your hourly wage or just tell them price estimates and give updates as you progress? That's on you. You can tell them your hourly wage, or you can give them just a general estimate. At no point do you say, like, again, that estimate would be estimate based, like, if you give them a flat price, because some of them don't want to fucking hear your hourly wage whatsoever. They just want to know what the freaking price is. So you say, well, I can give you an estimate based on my hourly on how long I think this will take. And then when you give that estimate with breathing room. You don't tell them it's with breathing room. And then you set another thing, I did not cover this. Another thing is deadline. You need to make sure that your deadlines are well above your estimates. If you know it takes you 2 days to do a piece, you know what your deadline is? 1 week. That's not to give you room to do it. That's not for you to be lazy and not do the commission you've agreed to. That's in order to ensure that you're not slamming yourself against the wall because things in reality popped up. Most all deadlines should start at least 1 week from date of acceptance with deposit. 1 week you have to do that. You should finish that within the first day and then send them a proof of concept, right? And you say, okay, this is proof, and then they check off on it. And or you can, actually, I would say if it's a week, within 3 days from the deadline sentiment. So if you finish it within the first day, your money's secure. And then 3 days before deadline, send them a proof of concept, see if they're going to be okay with it or not. Then use the next 3 days to make the changes if you need to with negotiation on revision prices. And then submit it within the deadline. But the deadlines you guys set always need to be much longer than what you estimate that time is going to take. Otherwise, you're putting a noose around your neck that doesn't need to be there.
So someone was asking, so I have a question. What is the best e-payment service? Like, I saw PayPal say that it's, I like
to, you might want to move back from your mic a bit, just a little bit.
I am way away from my mic, man. That's not just my voice projecting. They were, what are some alternatives? Also, could you talk about fever in more detail? I've heard from VOs that it is the scourge of the earth, and it sounds easily the same for drawn art. Voice actors, I think that VAs mean.
Where is this question?
It's a little bit above the previous one that you asked by Sina.
Oh, several people. So one question, what's the best e-payment service? Like, I like PayPal until I saw how anti-business they were. What are some alternatives? To be honest, I just use PayPal.
Some of the alternatives that I know of, I'm a professional, but I've looked it up. There's Stripe. There's... you could also use certain online bankings if they have that option. If you're okay with that.
What about Venmo?
No. Here's the thing. You guys need to be providing invoices. And also, you guys need to be tracking. You need to be tracking based on, you need any type of payment. I use PayPal. I've always used PayPal. But you need to be using a payment gateway that not only sends out invoice, but allows you to track, because when you turn this into a business, you need to be adding, and you do, this is another one. I'm glad this was brought up. You need to be also including an extra 50 cents in your hourly, no matter where it is, 50 cents to a dollar in your hourly for your taxes. And that needs to be tracked. And you need to have a full list at the end of the year when you file your taxes of all the money that you made, and of the, like, let's say you're making $15 an hour, that extra dollar an hour needs to be put into a tax payment account, because you will be taxed, and you should not be taking it out of your, you should not be spending that money when you go to file your taxes. This is not a tax class. I am not a tax attorney. I cannot tell you how to file freaking taxes on all this stuff and whatnot. I have a tax attorney for everything. So there's that. But when you are treating this like a business, you probably need an accountant or a tax professional for your filing, so that they can show you what your write-offs are going to be and whatnot. Isn't freelance taxes flat 30? I don't know. You need to be figuring out how much of a percentage of your, for instance, I'm still thinking about like a 6% sales tax rate, but if it's an I-9 and you have your state taxes as well as your federal taxes that you need to take into account. So like in California, if it's 40% with state and if, I think it's 40% in California, if it's 40%, then you need to increase your price, your hourly 40% to compensate for that. And your price has to be adjusted to that. So it's minimum wage plus 40%. Not 40% of minimum wage plus 40%. So if it was 10, to make it really easy, if it was $10, if you were charging $10 an hour, which none of you should be charging, but if you were charging $10 an hour, you would and that's what you want to make for your commissions, you would have to charge $14 to your client and take 40% of that into a bank account or a savings account to pay your taxes off later.
I have a two-part question about the legal part. It's like, when it comes to fan art, if we actually can do or how to approach them for like a singular individual. And the other one is like, when it comes to the contract, what established like a valid contract? You just like, this is me, I accept the terms in this contract and I'm getting this service, and then this person like fill them with and sign them, or they have to have a photo of ID together?
It's just the general contract that you're going to sign. If you're going to just do regular work, this is why I said if you're going to do commercial work, you need to have an attorney write up that contract for you and set the procedures for that. because if it's commercial and things get legal, that contract is going to be brought up in court, and it needs to be written by a legal professional with the legal jargon on it, so that there's no loopholes that another lawyer can argue against. For basic non-commercial personal use, it doesn't matter if you're doing fan art. It's the prompt. If they're not using it for commercial shit, it doesn't matter. You do run into issues when you're doing prints and whatnot, and there is issues by using IPs for like prints, though most companies won't bring the hammer down on it. But legally speaking, it is illegal to do fan art for commercial use, i.e. selling prints and whatnot. Because it's not copyrighted material that you're worried about, i.e. like, it's not the fact that Goku is copyrighted, it's the fact that Goku, if you're doing Goku fan art, is trademarked.
Yeah, that's a whole different horse.
Yeah, so that has its own can of worms in it.
That's a lot worse.
But a lot of people's mentality is it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. But depending on, listen, if you have a big name, you don't need to be doing fan art anymore. Sakimi-chan has been playing with fire for years. You know what I'm saying?
If you avoid logos and if you change the character, that's written. It's like it's
actually transformative.
If you change the character 40%, I don't know how they get there, but whatever.
That's copyright. That's copyright law. The thing with trademarks is you cannot use the character name. Use the character name.
Or the logos. Yeah, if you avoid all that, it'll be fine.
Basically, Sakimi-chan is still in this space because she's still using the names and whatever. Like, she probably has a contract with the trademarks part, right?
I don't think she's trademarked at all. And she's doing it through donation. And most, like, if you go to San Diego Comic-Con, most of the artists in Artist Alley are doing illegal fan art. But it's also, companies don't fucking care that much. Because it's free marketing. So they don't really care. There is, like, Disney is particularly protective over their IPs. Nintendo is particularly protective over their IPs.
DC too.
DC as well. But it generally has to do, they're not going to, the representatives, if you're at, like, a show, aren't going to say shit unless they're personally offended by what you do. You're just not protected. And then they'll give you a cease and desist first. They'll say, you can't do that anymore. Then you stop. They're not just going to sue you outright. They have to warn you first. They might sue you outright. But I haven't heard of that happen. We would hear horror stories from artists all over the world if that were the case. It would be much more known. Like, just like copyright strikes on YouTube, the art world would be much more known. But it's kind of like it's an unwritten rule that companies will leave artists alone that are doing their work unless they're personally motivated to get rid of that work. Because you're not...
They're pulling more money than the company.
Yeah.
We'll get you, for sure.
Yeah, or if you're pulling in enough money for them to make it worth it to sue you, like, they're not going to... Look, they're not going to pay their lawyers $15,000 to take you to court over the $500 you've been making. They don't care because they know you're not going to pay it. You're not what's called suable. Like, a lot of you, all of you are unsuable because you don't have money and you're just not going to pay it. You can just file bankruptcy and that goes away. Just file Chapter 7, that goes away. It'll hurt your credit, but the company will have been out money. It's bad business for them to sue you. But if you're, you know, David Cho and you do fan art and you have hundreds of millions of dollars, you bet your ass they're going to look for any opportunity because it's worth it to them at that point. Any other questions?
If you have a consistent signature throughout all of your artwork, wouldn't it be okay to add that signature to a commission?
Yeah, that's fine.
Unless they don't want it.
Yeah, if they don't want the signature, don't put it on. It's okay. Digital signature. I don't suggest putting digital signatures. I think they're worthless. I think it just ruins the piece. When you guys sign digital signatures on your work, it's meaningless. It's a digital signature. To sign art was a way of an artist kind of trademarking their tangible goods to say, I painted this on a tangible product. And the artist signing their work from back in the day was the way that they said, this is me. Because they have a painting. And people need to know how that painting was made. There wasn't the internet back then. There wasn't social media hashtags and whatnot. You can put a little hashtag or little logo at the bottom of your work. It'll probably get cropped out for those that are going to steal it. I again, wouldn't even worry too much about people stealing your art. It's going to happen. You can bring the hammer down on them, but the bigger you get as an artist, the more other people will do that for you. So you don't really need to worry about it.
It's impossible to control that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah, you can. If it's any more than you saying, hey, this person stole my art, you know, but starting a war over it or dedicating any more emotion than letting your audience deal with that for you is... I wouldn't even entertain it, especially if you don't have an audience and whatnot. Look, they may be like getting more followers from your artwork and it's screwed up. And again, you can get your friends to say credit this and you can reach out to them and say credit it. But, again, it's kind of the rite of passage. I would say it's really messed up. It angers me beyond belief. But at the same time, like, you just got to keep creating. You got to remember that the people who are stealing your artwork don't have the capability of doing what you're doing. And if you get good, you know, you're not going to care if it's one of your artworks because you have 10 other ones. And the cool thing, too, is if they steal your artwork and it performs really, really well on their stupid aggregate sites and it's outperforming their other stuff, that's a great way to know how much your art is valued. You know what I'm saying? Thank them. Because they put your art out there. Somebody's going to figure out it wasn't theirs, you know, at some point. If they don't, whatever. But if it gets a ton of likes and whatnot, guess what? You have an audience. Now you just need to worry about marketing.
That's pretty much what happened to me.
Is that what happened to you? I thought you did the three girls on ArtStation and it blew up.
No, I mean, that was the beginning. I mean, Instagram is where things happened for me, and it was mostly because other people started sharing my art in like art promotion accounts. That's how things happened, pretty much in a large scale. Yeah,
grow a following and gain commissions. Real quick, I'll let you finish. Be a separate class, by the way. That's a whole nutshell. That's a whole strategy class. Go ahead, Wavely. I mean, you can cover your experience with.
No, yeah. You have to think about for every person that posts your art without your permission or without crediting you, there's probably three more that are doing with credit. So you have a lot of traffic to your own page.
Since we're talking about basically getting my strategies could be used to grow a following and through that.
Cutting off for me, I can't hear.
See, I'm messing with my settings and no one can hear me now.
Now you're just cutting. I'm cutting on and off. I didn't understand anything.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Those settings.
This is why I don't need to change my settings, even though I have a loud voice. Mike was asking what strategies could we use to...
You can say the name of the person you can read.
What?
It's fine. Just start again.
Just ask the question. It doesn't matter who asked it.
Yeah. You'll know.
What strategies could we use to grow a following?
Oh, we're not covering that. That's what I was saying. We're not going to cover that today.
Okay.
Because I have a whole other, like, spiel on that rivals, like, what I've done today, where you guys are all doing it wrong. Like, honestly, you're all doing it wrong. But there's you're not all doing it wrong. But again, it's wrong mentality, wrong approach, little results, long term, too luck based. There's a whole methodology to growing a following that I can cover. It's not going to be nearly as long as commission. There's a whole methodology to that understanding how YouTube's algorithm works, how Instagram's algorithm works, how to prepare yourself to maximize algorithm pushing, how to develop an audience, what sort of forms and whatnot you should be working on. That all has its own can of worms that needs to be explored, and doing that now would be another hour long to 2 hour long conversation, and I'm done with like big conversations right now.
Will this happen soon?
Well, yeah, just that I'll figure out when I want to have, when I collect my thoughts I had to collect my thoughts for 20-30 minutes before I did this. So, yeah.
Stressed out. I got alcohol on me. Let's do this.
I'm not stressed at all.
No, I'm stressed.
Oh. So yeah, any more questions on commissions?
Not about commissions, but where does this get uploaded?
I'll figure that out after I get it from Petra. You'll see. For all of you that are on student tag, you'll get tagged on where this gets uploaded. It's not going to be uploaded on YouTube. If I'm doing anything on YouTube, I'm using my Canon 5D Mark IV and making it look pretty. I'm not going to use a freaking recording in a Discord. But I will have this for the Discord. So
could you just make it unlisted?
Maybe. That's not a bad idea, but maybe. With commissions, what should we add and not add into our portfolios? It's not really like a portfolio. If you're gonna make a commission sheet, just give a general idea of your services. So, you know, add services and then format it based on service and get your best work. So I'm willing to do sketches, get a dope sketch. I'm willing to do line art, get a dope piece of line art. Don't give a full portfolio. Just show what you're doing, you know, or
your best work and put it there.
Yeah, but related to the services that you're willing to do.
Do you have any professional templates we can borrow in order to use as an example for our own commissions?
No professional uses templates. All of them have enough of a name and following that they're directly communicating with clientele. They use their social media platforms as their advertisement because they're large enough. I haven't seen professional templates. If you want a template, I would suggest going to any graphic design, web design website and looking at how they format it, and you'll see 90% of the time there's no freaking prices on there. It might have package prices, but most of those companies let their salesmen do the talking, and you need to be the salesman of your own company for now. If you really want to get crazy and you got the money, I would suggest making a website and hiring a sales team, because they will talk you up like crazy, or getting a manager. I hate salesmen, but they are powerful tools. Emphasis on tool. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up. Waveloop, do you have anything else you'd like to have?
No, unless there's another question.
No. I think everybody's...
I actually had something real quick, because I misunderstood something earlier.
Sure.
are we basing the deposit, like that 20%, 30% off of like what we're estimating it will be in the total?
Yes. Yes. Oh,
okay. Okay. I just want to make sure. Thank you.
There's a couple of questions popping up.
20%. How do you deal with a client who isn't clear with what they want or want to nitpick everything as you show them?
That is
fire the client.
Yeah. If it gets too much, just drop it. Cut your losses and walk away.
Fire the client.
There's a good example of like professionalism and like commission work, I guess. There was a recent scandal with like this girl who pretends to be like Miss Leafy or something. I forgot, but there's like a YouTuber named Yuki Buns who did a commentary on it. If you guys want to check that out.
Wait, what? What is that?
Oh, okay. People are calling her Madame or whatever. But yeah, she like asked someone on Instagram who made fan art of her to make something for her. And then whatever, they got paid by exposure, first of all.
Oh, yeah.
Second of all.
Yeah, by the way, none of you ever should be paid by exposure. If you're doing fan art for somebody, and again, if you're doing fan art for somebody and you're doing the fan art, you have creative control, refer back to what I said. Price it whatever way you want. You want to price it for free? Go ahead, because it's your practice, what you're enjoying to do. The second somebody says, I want you to do this for me and becomes your boss and your gatekeeper, there's money. Exposure is never freaking worth it. You will, listen, I want you to understand something. The amount of time that you would spend on that piece, right? Let's say you spend 6, 7, 8 hours on that piece, right? And you get exposure on Instagram, okay? You're going to get like 20, 30, maybe most, 100 followers. You know what you could do and save all that fucking time? You can take $15 and make an advertisement on Instagram. Guess what? You'll get more followers. And at the end of the day, you saved money. Why? Because you didn't waste time. You need to think of your time as money. So the more money that you can save, the more time that you can save, the more money you're saving. So putting down a small amount of money on your Instagram to promote yourself is far more effective than wasting 10 hours, 12 hours to do some fan art for some ungrateful bitch that isn't going to fucking respect your work. So, sorry. But yeah. Like, I've been there. I've done that. I've screwed up.
I don't know. There's, like, I've seen people get exposed for, like, exposure for, like, so many different things. Like, let's say if they like somebody, right, and they do fan art for, let's say, someone that's really popular, and they're not asking for money, but I've seen it work in their favor when, I drew my favorite person, and now they shot me out on Instagram or whatever, and now I have people asking for work.
Yes, but that's you doing it on your own time. That's a strategy. If someone asks for it, that's a different deal.
Okay.
If you choose to use your own time as a strategy, you go and you do a fan art of a big name, that's you working on yourself and your following. That's a strategy you can use. I actually used that strategy in the past, and it worked. But as soon as someone else asks you to do, then that's the job. You should be paid for it.
100%. And again, we're not going to get too deep into that because there's a whole mentality behind all that. But again, there was another thoughts on your character here commissions. How would you price them if you list your character here? Hourly. Everything I'm always going to say is hourly. You need to know how long it takes you to do. Doesn't matter if you're doing the Sistine Chapel or if you're doing a 5-minute sketch, yep. Like a rough sketch. You need to know. And by the way, if it's ever underneath an hour, it's always an hour. So if it takes you 20 minutes to do a sketch, you charge 1 hour. Like, it's always that. I'm not going to give you guys reasonable price ranges, because I did. California minimum wage standard. Universally, California minimum wage standard is where you're at. Always. Always. That's where you're at. You California minimum wage, I think, is like 13 or 15 bucks an hour. 15 bucks an hour. There. Boom. You need a number? $15 an hour. Nothing less than that. If it takes you 6 to 8 hours to do something nobody's buying, again, refer back to what I said. You need to get faster. At that point, it's on you. It's not on them. It's on you. You need to get faster. You need to get better. You need to be more effective. It's a good barometer of are you ready for commissions or not. If you're not ready for commissions, don't take them. Don't do commissions. You're just going to burn yourself out that much freaking faster. Don't waste your fucking time on, sorry for the young people, but don't waste your time on commissions if you're not at I don't do commissions. A lot of people would consider me a good artist. I don't do commissions. Like, I wouldn't sit down and do them at all because they're not worth it to me. I'd rather practice. I also make my money elsewhere. But if you guys have day jobs and stuff, you're already working for money. Use your spare time to practice, get better, work on your fundamentals. That's what you should be focusing on. So when you're ready to do commissions, you're banging them out 2-3 hours at a time. And if your quality is high enough, you're getting paid $30, $40, $50, $60 an hour for two to three hours of your time. Waveloop can make a fantastic sketch and illustration in 3 hours. 3 hours. And he does it at a professional level. If he worked on his fundamentals, he'd be even faster. But at the same time, like, he can do it in 3 hours. He can bang out, and if you watch him drawing, he can bang out 5 or 6 commissions back to back. And he's getting paid in hourly for each one of those. And he's making money on each one of those.
Yep. It's good practice if you're really serious on commissions. Once a week, you sit down, you pull off the timer, and you time yourself. You do a back-to-back commission, and you see how it has to be the same thing, or it's worthless. But as a gauge, it's a good idea to do. I did that. And it's never what you expect. If you don't do it regularly, where you can do an estimate, an average, it's always... more than you expect, always.
And then the cool thing is when you get a name, like a really big name, and you can do this these sketches in like 20-30 minutes, you start making like $500 an hour. Hold on, I'll be right back.
Guys that have more questions, feel free.
I just wish someone let me know that you guys were talking about this how to price yourself thing. I just saw right now. I don't know if I'm titled a student, actually. I don't think I'm titled a student.
This will be here. You can watch it, the whole thing. Costa will upload. Someone was...
Oh, okay. Oh, dope. Yeah. I remember we talked about it for a bit yesterday, but it was like super late for me, so I was just like kind of like out of it. But
yeah. No, it's fine. You can rewatch everything.
Dope. Okay. Cool.
I have a new tax attorney. That's interesting.
How do you guys handle scope creep?
Scope creep.
What?
That's a good question.
Scope creep, where you have something agreed in the beginning on how the project's going to go, and halfway to decide, oh, this black and white is going to be full color now.
You just add on to it.
Yeah, give them a new quote.
You guys won't run into scope
project without your say so. You're the one doing the project. You get to set the price.
Yeah, and again, if you guys aren't putting prices on your illustrations and you're negotiating it, that happens in the negotiation period. And then if they change the scope again, your deposit protects you from this. If your client changes up the project, you go, okay, you're going to get a new estimate for that. In fact, that new estimate is going to require an additional deposit because the full scope of it has now changed. So the amount of time that you're going to be putting into it has now changed. So you need to set them aside and renegotiate it. If they're changing the scope of the project, they're changing the nature of the job. So they get a new price. And again, you're going to calculate it based on your hourly rate, and you're going to spitball back an estimate. So if you give them a grayscale and they're like, you know what? I like the grayscale. Let's move this into color. I want to go into color. And you're like, okay, well, we're going to have to renegotiate the price. And they're like, no, that's not the price we're negotiating. Yes, but that was the price that we negotiated. Clear list of your services. What service do you want? If you're running into scope creep, then make your services even more specific if you're running into this problem. Oh, grayscale is this. Sketch is this. Full ink is this. Head, sketch, blah, blah, blah. Getting as specific as possible in your services and what you're willing to do and then what you're willing to negotiate, yeah, it's going to be annoying at first. You're going to have to deal with the client. But you being annoying for 20 minutes, an hour, to them is CYA. Cover your ass.
Yeah.
The less you leave out from the conversation, the more room they have to come in and screw you over. And until you guys, like, you need to treat every client in the beginning as a complete idiot that is going to waste your time. They could. They're probably not going to be. But they're out there. So you need to come into it jaded, very jaded, and like, oh, I need to protect myself against you because you're messing with my money right now. And you're not a real boss or a manager. You're just some idiot online that is going to make me work for you. So you're like, you're vetting them the entire time. So always CYA, cover your ass in that conversation. Get specific, like Waveloop said. Explain the process. Explain what they're getting for their money. Tell them. They want to know too. Most people are not idiots. They just want to know what you're doing and what they're paying for. Look, go through the commission info section right now. Like the bureaucracy in the commission info right now. You said sketch at $15. What does sketch mean? What does it mean?
Yeah.
Do you think your client knows what sketch means? No.
Yes.
Is it a gesture? I don't even know what sketch means. Is it a gesture? Is it cross contours? Is it a pose? What is it? What is a sketch? Is it something that's good enough to be posted on Instagram? You need to provide examples, and you need to be very specific, because a lot of this is very abstract and a lot of these words are very abstract, and it's your fault if you're not informing the client enough to understand what they're paying for. That's your fault. So if you're getting scope creeped after this conversation, it's your fault, not theirs. If you don't clearly lay down the law on what you're willing to do, that's your fault. It's not the client's, it's yours. If you lay down the law and you say, this is what I'm willing to do, and you are clear about it, and you say, this is what you're getting, and the client goes, nah, I'm not doing that. That client's an asshole. Get rid of them. Keep your deposit. Goodbye. I don't ever need to work with you again. I don't want to work with you again. You're a bad client. You're fired. Like, straight up, I'm throwing your name into a trash can and lighting it on fire.
Raw passions here in this chat.
there's a good example of that I get. Half of the time I get like concept art for characters, for example. The first thing they say is full colored with a simple background. a simple background for them can be a starship. It takes you 3 times more than doing the character itself. That is recurrent. Because people think, oh, it's just put some stuff in the background. They have no idea that you have to align it. You have to work on perspective. You have to render the ship. It's a practical example. So you need to get all that cleared right from the get-go.
Here's a technique to do it as well. If they use that sort of language, like, I want a simple background, and you haven't provided examples, ask for examples.
Yeah.
Get them here.
I always ask. I don't know. This is stupid sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, well, again, is it? Are they stupid? Are they stupid? Like, are they dumb? Can they not communicate what they want? Do you want to answer to them as a boss? If they can't simply put their ideas out there, like, do you want to deal with that? Oh, I want a simple background. Provide me some examples of what you think a simple background is. Well, the Mona Lisa has a really simple background. You know, the background of Sistine Chapel is pretty simple. You know what I'm saying? All right, cool. That's not a simple background. You know? Oh, I don't even know what a simple background is. I don't have any examples for you. All right, come back to me when you have those. Like, come back to me, please. Before you ever even attempt to approach me with what you want, you come to me with what you think you want. Because I can't do anything else for you until you know what you want. Again, that's on you. You accept that stupid explanation and you don't dive into further details, that's on you. Your fault. And then you're like, don't be surprised when they come back, you give them the estimate and they come back, that's too much money for me. Or I wanted more. I don't want to do this anymore. Give me my deposit back. Don't be surprised when they do that. Like, don't be surprised. Don't give them the deposit back. Never give them the deposit back. If you've done the work and you're turning in proofs, you keep the deposit. The only time you're required to give them their deposit back is if you're not meeting the deadlines. You're not measuring up to what you promised. That's when you give them the deposit back because you screwed up. But if you're not screwing up, you're doing your job. You're being a professional about it. You keep the deposit. And you let them yell at you all you want, and you just go, okay, bye. And if you want, take a screenshot of what they did and put it on quietsfromhell.com.
Is it viable to not offer backgrounds at all?
If you don't want to do them, don't do them.
Okay.
You don't have to do anything.
You don't have to do backgrounds if you don't really want to. Like, it's up to you. If you are the artist, you are the person that they're talking to.
I feel like artists that offer backgrounds get noticed more.
Well,
not always, I would say. There's a lot of Japanese artists that only do figures. They only do figures only, and they're pretty much known.
Yeah, true.
What about making a contract? Like, do you think a contract should be needed always?
I think a general outline of services rendered and estimate based on services rendered is smart practice. Is it required? No, none of this is required ever. Like, you get money. What is required is you have to, like, requirement is you have to track how much money you're getting so you can pay your taxes. That is required. You need to invoice out so that they can, if it's for their company, they can claim for their taxes because that might be a business expense on their part. That is required. A contract is not required. It's there to protect you. So however much protection you want is how much time you're willing to put into your contract development or money from a lawyer.
Okay.
But me and most of my artist friends have created our own terms of services just to show clients what we offer and how we expect to be treated so they know what we're looking for. Like,
yeah, that's
50% up front and all that. Mm. No refunds. Some artists don't offer refunds at all, so I don't know.
I would say you're going to run into a really sticky scenario if you're not providing the work and not refunding them. If the second you provide any type of work, You have any type of reasonable work. You can't just draw a stick man and be like, well, I drew that stick man. Thank you. You know, it has to fall within the guidelines that you say. But the second you provide work, it's non-refundable after that point. If they stop, like the deposit too, there is one gray area you need to take into consideration where you can take a loss and you do need to refund the deposit, is if they renege before you give them approved, then you kind of need to pay the deposit back. Because there's a buyer's remorse period where you kind of need to honor that, and you have to give them the ability. That's why you can't spend the deposit money until after you submit the proof. Because once they get the proof and they go, "Oh, I don't want it anymore," then they like, then it's like, you know, let me put it to you like this: you kind of need to have a heart too, because if they get the proof and they go, "Oh, I don't want it anymore," you keep the money. That's it. Because I don't care if they said my mother died and everything else like that. I don't want it. You keep the deposit. You know what I'm saying? But because you sent the proof, they could just be lying to you at that point to tug on your heartstrings. But before you send the proof, let's say you get the commission. They send you the deposit. 2 days later, they hit you back up. "Hey, I'm sorry. I need the deposit back. I can't go through with this." Give them their deposit back. You don't even need to ask why. Give them their deposit back. Because you don't know why. They haven't seen what you've done. They haven't seen what you've done. So they're not making it. They're not reneging on their issue with your work. They're reneging because they probably have hit significant financial hardship, and you can't think of that deposit as your money until you provided the first step of those terms. So just give them their money back, because their mom might have died. Their dad might have died. They might have been laid off from their job. They might be hitting, then have enough of a heart to say, "Okay, here's your deposit back. You'll get another commission." But the second you turn in a proof, I would say keep the deposit, unless like you're friends with them on Facebook and they're like, "My mom just died." Like, obviously, don't be a dick. That's bad karma.
Yeah.
How would proofs and deposit work if they want sketch service? It would be considering sketches are just sketches, then you can send them thumbnails, like do 5-6 thumbnails, send them the thumbnail and have them pick out which one they want. That would be first proof. So do thumbnails. Don't do a full sketch. Just do like minor thumbnails of like storyboard type thumbnails. How do you want the head arranged? Do you like this pose? Don't worry about the end of the line work. "Oh yeah, I like this one. I like this one." Okay, cool. And then from there you start working on it after you've sent the proof. And then if they go, "Oh, you know what? I don't want this anymore." You know what I'm saying? After you already started, after your initial first proof, then you can say, "Well, I'm keeping the deposit." It's on your discretion at that point. Once they've started the wheels rolling by that first proof, and again, I haven't really been clear on how to prove. I apologize for that, but it should be, it's on you, but it should be, you should understand what kind of stages it would take to get from a first piece to a final piece, and you should start at the beginning of your first stages. So like a rough sketch where you haven't cleaned up the line work or anything else like that. Before the time intensive part comes in, then you do the proof. So near the foundational stage with enough information so that they understand what's going on. That would be first proof. That's all they need, first proof. The second they okay that, if it's in stages, you do an inking stage proof. You do a flats proof. You do a full colored proof just to secure yourself. It, again, it's on you.
I personally prefer to spend a little more time in a good sketch and skip the inking, for example. And then my next stage will be flats and the first stages of rendering, because it saves me a lot of time and back and forth. But if I spend a little bit more time in getting a good sketch that the person can read, because most of them, if I do a really rough sketch, they don't have the vision to see where it's going. That happens a lot, at least in my experience. So I prefer to spend a little bit more time in the first draft, in the first sketch, and then skip a stage because they can read the sketch good enough to where it's going. That's what I do personally.
All right, we're at 2.5 hours. I'm going to cut it off here.
I had a complicated question.
All right, well, I'll take one more question because we have 9 more minutes before 2.5 hours. So one more question.
Okay, I had somebody that I was doing a free piece for, and I was taking hex code from his sample piece to get the correct colors.
Uh-huh.
And it was showing up correctly on my iPad and my monitor, but for him it was a totally different color. Is it because his monitor wasn't calibrated correctly?
Yes, and you need to be, for almost everything, you need to be printing out. There's a tutorial for color calibration. I would also warn the client on that. You should be doing print proofs for yourself just for colors.
Uh-huh.
Your standard printer with some standard decent printer with some decent paper, do a print proof. Although that print is always going to come out a little bit more washed. But you guys should be doing print proofs for yourself anyways, in case you ever want to make anything you're doing into a poster. And those have to be formatted in CMYK. And you are probably going to need to always bump up the values 100% to... So anything on CMYK scale, anything that is 100% black and over when you're mixing in other colors, so those dark, dark blacks that you're seeing on the screen, they all get washed. So you need to actually convert it to CMYK and make sure the darkest dark is... C0Y, well, you can do CMYK, that would be a little bit darker, but everything needs to be, every value that you want to read needs to be above 100% K and zero on CM and Y. Yeah. That's kind of a complicated, that would have to be a different class, which is setting up your work for print. I would have to like go through that. But again, the best way to do it is just print it out on your own, see if it's reading on the print, and then make a levels adjustment layer and adjust your colors. But the level adjustment layer for the values, so I'm going to give you a quick tip, which is you should always pull your dark, the darkest darks much closer to the light. So you're just going to take the darks and pull them closer, because the blacks on ink are not nearly as black. Reflected light is not nearly as, it can get nearly as black as just visual light spectrum. And what you guys are seeing on your monitors is the visual light spectrum. So the blacks on your monitors are literal dead pixels, and it has more range because you can adjust the light. For reflected light, black value is not nearly as a sensitive of a range, so it just flattens out all the shadows and whatnot. So if you want bounce light to read within a shadow, you generally have to move all your values up about 10%, like the entire black scale up 10% in the CMYK.
Okay.
But yeah, there's that. But yes, color calibration on screens is going to be a big hurdle for you guys. And again, I would just suggest when they get it, say, hey, check it on your phone, check it on your desktop. Your screen's colors are a little bit different. It's impossible for me to calibrate to your screens. Having a good monitor with a good color setting, you can do research. I don't have that for you guys. Don't even ask me. But doing research online, Apple monitors are really good about colors. That's a big reason why people prefer Apple devices for beyond the operating system. Color profiles on Apple are really nice, and their monitors are really nice. But most expensive monitors nowadays are fantastic color profiles, but you have to literally look that up. I will cover that, calibrating your monitor for your print. I will have to do research on that, and if I ever do a print class, like how to set up like your own print station and how to make your own prints and whatnot, and how to prepare your artwork for tangible goods. If I ever get around to doing a class on that, which would be, I would have to actually prepare for that quite a bit, and not just talking to a mic. Mm-hmm. If I did that, then I would cover that in more depth.
Yeah, I wasn't looking to prepare it for print. It was just showing up different on his monitor, and I was like...
Yeah, just to the client, right?
Well, me being obsessed with color, because that's what I studied in college... I've calibrated all my monitors.
Yeah, you have to say that to the client.
There's no way that I can see what your monitor looks like.
Yeah, it's pretty much all you can do at that point.
Maybe you should ask
do it on his phone next time. Maybe it's his computer's problem and he needs a different looking glass to use.
But, I mean, even if you looked at your phone and my phone would be different than yours.
Of course.
So, I mean, that's difficult.
It can also be the software that he's viewing it in. Because software can read color values very differently. Like, there's certain color channels in Photoshop that don't quite translate to other programs.
I gave him a PNG. I would never give my layers to somebody.
No, I just meant like the like when you're starting the file and you're picking out your color channels, some of those color channels just aren't as well decoded in other software. That's what I'm trying to say.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not sure what he opened it in. I did it in Procreate.
Okay. I am wrapping it up.
All right.
Go,
all
right. Go to replay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your advice.
Yeah, go draw. Go sit down. Think about it. This is not something that I gave you a little conversation, but it's not something you're going to figure out without some time. Use it as a kind of a basis and work from there. You're going to have to make adjustments. Just California standard minimum wage. That's where you should be.
Hourly.
Hourly.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cos. Also, thank you, Wave Loop.